Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. One of the things that I sometimes do is have the pleasure of introducing a new writer, in this case a brand new writer. His name is Justin Torres. His collection of short stories, which is also known as a novel, we'll talk about that, I guess, has just been beautifully published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. And, well, tell me what it's been like.
To be here now with you is you know, kind of mind-blowing. And this is after, you know, being on tour and having really some really, really kind of wonderful reviews. You know, there's been criticism as well, but it's been dizzying. It's been dizzying. And I feel like sometimes I'm kind of racing to catch up, you know, to it all.
Do you feel ready?
I mean, I stand behind every word in the book. And I felt ready for the book to go out into the world. And I feel like it's a small book, and I took my time with it. And so every word's kind of considered and deliberate. And I don't cringe when I read it. Maybe I will in a couple of years. So in that sense, I feel ready. In the sense of the public persona, am I ready for that kind of public scrutiny? I don't know.
I thought we should begin by hearing the first chapter of the book. Do you consider it a collection or a novel?
You know, I feel kind of lucky. I kind of backed into writing, so I didn't have these firm distinctions like poetry, fiction, nonfiction. Everything has to be separate, intensely. Short stories, novel, you know what I mean? Like, I just wrote, kind of. I went to the heat and I wrote what made sense. So the novel designation was not my original designation. I didn't have a designation. And so I'm fine with it.
Who told you what it was? who said it's a novel?
I think it was a conversation between me and my editor, and we talked a lot about it. And I'm interested in kind of playing with structure in general and blowing things up as much as possible. So if it makes some people uncomfortable that it's a novel, that's great with me.
This is the first chapter from We the Animals. It's called We Wanted More.
We wanted more. We knocked the butt ends of our forks against the table, tapped our spoons against our empty bowls. We were hungry. We wanted more volume, more riots. We turned up the knob on the TV until our ears ached with the shouts of angry men. We wanted more music on the radio. We wanted beats. We wanted rock. We wanted muscles on our skinny arms. We had bird bones, hollow and light, and we wanted more density, more weight. We were six snatching hands, six stomping feet. We were brothers, boys, three little kings locked in a feud for more. When it was cold, we fought over blankets until the cloth tore down the middle. When it was really cold, when our breath came out in frosty clouds, Manny crawled into bed with Joel and me. Body heat, he said. Body heat, we agreed. We wanted more flesh, more blood, more warmth. When we fought with boots and garage tools, snapping pliers. We grabbed at whatever was nearest and we hurled it through the air. We wanted more broken dishes, more shattered glass. We wanted more crashes. And when our pops came home, we got spankings. Our little round butt cheeks were tore up, red, raw, leather whipped. We knew there was something on the other side of pain, on the other side of the sting. Prickly heat radiated upward from our thighs and backsides. Fire consumed our brains. But we knew that there was something more, some place our pops was taking us with all this. We knew because he was meticulous, because he was precise, because he took his time. He was awakening us. He was leading us somewhere beyond burning and ripping, and you couldn't get there in a hurry. And when our father was gone, we wanted to be fathers. We hunted animals. We drudged through the muck of the creek, chasing down bullfrogs and water snakes. We plucked the baby robins from their nest. We like to feel the beat of tiny hearts, the struggle of tiny wings. We brought their tiny animal faces close to ours. "Who's your daddy?" we said. Then we laughed and tossed them into a shoebox. Always more, always hungrily scratching for more. But there were times, quiet moments, when our mother was sleeping, when she hadn't slept in 2 days, and any noise, any stair creak, any shut door, any stifled laugh, any voice at all might wake her. Those still, crystal mornings when we wanted to protect her, this confused goose of a woman, this stumbler, this gusher, with her backaches and headaches and her tired, tired ways, this uprooted Brooklyn creature, this tough talker, always with tears when she told us she loved us, her mixed-up love, her needy love, her warmth. Those mornings when sunlight found the cracks in our blinds and laid itself down in crisp strips on our carpet. Those quiet mornings when we'd fix ourselves oatmeal and sprawl onto our stomachs with crayons and paper, with glass marbles that we were careful not to rattle. When our mother was sleeping, when the air did not smell like sweat or breath or mold, when the air was still and light. Those mornings when silence was our secret game and our gift and our sole accomplishment, we wanted less. Less weight, less work, less noise, less father, less muscles and skin and hair. We wanted nothing, just this, just this.
Justin Torres reading the first chapter from his book, We the Animals. Now, you say that you backed into writing. Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
I was in my mid-20s, and I was living in New York, and I wasn't making the best decisions or taking the best care of myself. And I was kind of just running around broke, and a friend of mine was like, I'm going to take a writing class. And it just, you know, I always had an interest in literature. You know, it's a big reader. I would kind of scribble here and there. And I was like, that sounds great. And I took that class and eventually met Jackson Taylor, who had this private kind of writing group that he did. And he was just super supportive. But it was a kind of piece by piece, moment by moment thing. You know, I mean, he let me attend this class for free because I couldn't afford to go. And I kept kind of signing up again and again. And all I had to do was show up with a couple pages once a week, and we would all read what we'd come up with that week. And the goal was just to move the people in that room. And so I went to what moved me. I was really impressed by everything. It was a really diverse group, all walks of life. And I just tried to write moving pieces. And so they were short. They were punchy. They blended my personal experience with fiction. They were poetic. You know, I didn't have a lot of those kind of distinctions.
Were you any good when you started out?
I think I was all right. not to toot my own horn. I got better. I think one of the biggest stumbling blocks that I had was that I started from a place of anger and I felt kind of betrayed. And I think I was writing through that. And I had people who were like, it's not enough to just write the anger. You've got to get the grace and the beauty. Dorothy Allison was one of the people who said this to me. You know, you've got to get the grace and the beauty and the fullness of human experience. You can start with anger, but you can't stay there. And so that took some training, for sure.
Yeah. How long do you think it was before you were writing with something like the wholeness of human experience?
I remember writing that opening that I just read. I was standing on a subway train platform, and I didn't have a pen and paper because I was still like not that good of a writer, you know, that I knew to carry such things with me all the time. And I was chanting to myself and kind of canting, you know, and that the rhythm and the rhyme and trying to memorize because I kind of knew what I wanted to write about. And I think that was a way of saying that we wanted more, but I knew that wasn't always the case. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, you know, the deprivation was half the story, and that there was something kind of wondrous and magical supplied to myself and my brothers as children. And as it moved more and more in fictional direction, the characters in this book, I think that was kind of a breakthrough for me, yeah.
And I think that writers have only been helped by memorizing the work before they get it to the page, mm-hmm. hearing it inside and being afraid to lose it, mm-hmm. and being kind of desperate to take it to a flat surface and get it down on the page.
Absolutely, absolutely. I write the best in the shower, and that means I lose probably 90%. But it's like that desperation that, like, I'm jumping out of the shower and I'm like trying to get myself dry enough to write it down. Whenever I'm away from the paper or the computer, I write better because I have to memorize. It has to be rhythmic. It has to be something that has that ability to cling to your mind. And so I forced myself to do a lot of other things. It was easy when I was working a lot of bad jobs, and it was easy then because I couldn't sit down and write, you know. And so a lot of great things would come to me, and I would boil them down to their essence and memorize a certain part. Now that I have ridiculous amounts of leisure, I force myself to do other things so that I'm still memorizing, I'm still talking out loud, I'm still working it through a lot before I sit down and write.
I'm talking to Justin Torres about his very first book, We the Animals. It does sound to my ear like you're sort of a natural. Who suggested that you go to that famous writer's workshop in Iowa?
Yeah, I never heard of Iowa when I started writing. I mean, I had a good portion of this book before I'd heard of Iowa. But it was the kind of thing that I started finding more ways. You know, I did, like, Bread Loaf, and, you know, Tin House has a little summer thing. And I was finding more ways for people to kind of pay my expenses for a little while so I could really focus on writing. And Iowa just kept coming up. And at first I was like, why are you telling me to go to Iowa? You know, like, what is there? But then, of course, when I looked into it, I was amazed at who had been through there. And I was still pretty skeptical when I was accepted, even. I just was not sure, but it was a great experience. And, you know, the fellowship that I had there was probably below the poverty level, but it was twice as much money as I had ever earned in a year. And it really gave me time to do what I wanted to do, you know.
It seems to me, though, that writers who don't come from a troubled background aren't writers for the most part, or I'll say it better. Donald Barthelme said to me, we have all had a sad childhood.
Yes, 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 yes. I think that if you haven't had a sad childhood, you just weren't paying enough attention. I mean, what happens to children growing up is difficult, and what happens is you're kind of, there's an absence of adult vocabulary, you know, and when I was growing up, nobody said, this is a disadvantaged family. You know, I mean, nobody said this is dysfunctional or abusive. I mean, these weren't terms that people speak to children about when they're talking about, and children don't have them. They conceive in terms of magic and wonder, and, you know, they realize when things are off, but there's not this kind of shaming vocabulary. And that happens, I think, slowly. In many moments, you kind of get shamed and shamed and shamed until you're an adult. And I think that has to happen to every child. I mean, every child has to be stripped of a certain kind of wondrous belief in the world.
But sometimes, I don't know how to put it, that wondrousness is not in fact there. You know there's something wrong and you lack the words for it. And eventually the official words come along and they're not quite right because doesn't sound right. You can't quite imagine abuse as defining
exactly
what a person who also loves you has done. And probably there's still no right word.
I mean,
what would you call it?
Yeah, I try not to call, I mean, in my personal experience, and even for the family in this book, I try not to call it anything other than, if there was a shorthand for it, I don't think I'd have written the book. You know what I mean? There's no... It's complicated, you know, and these shorthands, I think, can do a lot of damage. I think that there are too many easy representations out there, you know? I mean, I think that I got sick of talking about my life experiences and having and what's being given back to me is dysfunction. I mean, that's like, what does that even mean? You know, what is normal? There is no normal. And so I think that I tried to write a book where there were no villains and there were no victims. And it was complicated, you know, because I didn't want to write about victims. And there is such a thing as abuse in the world, you know? I mean, there is. And those victims of abuse, like, you know, I have nothing but, you know, empathy for them. But nobody's chained in the basement, you know, being denied food. You know what I mean? Like, this is passion. This is people who are ill-equipped. They fail, you know? I mean, in many ways, they fail. Sometimes they exceed the expectations of the children in this book. Sometimes they're wonderful, but in many ways, they're failing. They're you know, they're not prepared, but also, whatever, they're tired, they're stressed, there's a lot of pressure on them, and they take an easier route, you know, than they should, you know, and they don't give the children maybe everything that they ought to.
And although there are problems in the other direction as well, there's a whole network of things that happen to the undereducated and uneducated in America. Mm-hmm. They make assumptions. They're taught things that are not true. They're superstitious mm-hmm. about all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And all of those things come up in your book.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the narrator, the youngest narrator of this book has a sensibility from an early age, a kind of wide open, you know, wide-eyed ability to look at the world and see shortcomings. And I think that part of it is a queer sensibility as well, that, you know, obviously that's not the language you're articulating it in your mind as a child, but you're just like, these people are functioning under assumptions that don't apply to me. And there's a kind of machismo in the house, and there's, you know what I mean? There's people, you know, treating each other in ways that are immediately objectionable to this narrator.
Well, one of the things that I do think is brilliant and effective in the book, and you can hear it in what you read, which is that for a gay child, many things are eroticized, including mm-hmm. spankings. Mm-hmm. Including toothpaste tubes or, you know, the tubes that hold beauty cream or extra virgin olive oil. Mm-hmm. You live in a world that you're waiting to see manifest itself in truly sexual terms rather than covert ones.
Yeah, yeah. I think that is really, really true. And I, you know, it's not something that's come up before, so it's the first time that I'm having to articulate the way I feel about this. But yeah, that is the truth. You don't get to see kind of the sexual world as you're going to live it later on. You know what I mean? And so you see a lot of sexuality, but you're like, this doesn't apply to me. You know what I mean? And then so you're constantly searching for, well, what is erotic to me? What is, you know, if I don't want that, then what do I want? And yeah, that can happen, sure.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from KCRW. I'm talking with Justin Torres at Argo Studios in New York. Justin is the author, most recently, of the novel We the Animals. We'll continue after this short break.
This is Connie Alvarez. Bookworm is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station in Los Angeles. It costs money to put this program together. Please help support us by going to kcrw.com/join.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Justin Torres about his new book, We the Animals. It's a book in which, rather than brothers, the vision is of the family as a tribe composed of animals who are being tamed or failing to be tamed, or especially becoming still more exotic animals. By the end of the book, the hero, the frequent narrator, is, let's hear the final chapter.
All right, great.
This is called Zookeeping. And as you can imagine, by now in a zoo, the animals are trained and tamed and exotic.
These days, I sleep with peacocks, lions, on a bed of leaves. I've lost my pack. I dream of standing upright, of uncurled knuckles, of a simpler life. No hot muzzles, no fangs, no claws, no obscene plumage. Strolling gaily with an upright air. I sleep with other animals in cages and in dens, down rabbit holes, on tufts of hay. They adorn me, these animals. Lay me down, paw me, own me, crown me prince of their rank jungles. Upright, upright, I say, I slur, I vow.
Well, the character has come out, for one thing. Mm-hmm. And so rather than dogs, which is mostly the identification mm-hmm. in the book, peacocks,
yeah.
and therefore pride, mm-hmm. proud as a peacock, they used to say. Your father mm-hmm. is as proud as a peacock of you. I think, really? Never told me. But it was nice to hear. But, you know, lions,
yeah.
king of the jungle,
yeah.
brings us to a jungle. I've lost my pack, leaving the dogs and the wolves mm-hmm. behind. Mm-hmm. He gets there. Down rabbit holes, we can't escape. Alice in Wonderland
yeah,
is there.
Yeah, and a certain kind of lost, you know. I mean, the wild world continues into adulthood, and there's, you know, there's going to be sexual experiences, and there's going to be drug-fueled experiences, and there's going to be drug-fueled sexual experiences. and there's going to be an impulse to keep or to, you know, to remain an animal, you know what I mean? Whether or not you're no longer a dog, now you're a peacock, but it's still a reduction of your full humanity. And the last line, upright, upright, is it's aspirational. You know, I don't know whether this narrator will ever get there, but it's that desire to be human, you know, to be fully human and not to be reduced to a dog or a peacock.
You reveal yourself in many aspects sexually mm-hmm. in this book, mm-hmm. not just as a writer, mm-hmm. but as a sexual person. Mm-hmm. Does that make you nervous?
No. I spent too much of my life being shamed and, you know, I'm not afraid, you know. I mean, it is something people wonder about, but no, not at all. I mean, I am a sexual person, you know, and I've done all kinds of things under the sun, and I know people who've done even more, and I think that they're all beautiful, and there's not much that's ever happened to me in my life that I keep in any kind of darkness, because I tried and it nearly destroyed me, so yeah.
A lot of writers who would have dreaded the use of the word gay in their nimbus made it in their work sound like a very threatening world. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of, in particular, of, say, Paul Bowles mm-hmm. or James Purdy, mm-hmm. People for whom it really meant telling readers you were coming into the zone mm-hmm. of the deepest fear and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And here, too, there's the sense that whatever it is, it's not going to be safe.
Mm-hmm. I lean more towards the word queer than I do towards gay, like just in general. And
well, it has a longer vowel sound even than gay, queer.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just a little bit more expansive and maybe, you know, can be related to better, you know, whatever. But what can I say? I don't think that it's a dark world out there. You know, I don't think that it's necessarily a troubling experience. I think that that's changing more and more all the time. You know what I mean? I look at 14-year-olds who are just like, this is my boyfriend. You know what I mean? Like, this is my life. And they feel fine about it. It's amazing to me. But there's something for some people, gay or straight or queer or whatever, that the sexual messages are confusing. And there's, you know, and they get shamed for whatever reason, and it's going to take them a long time to battle through that, and they're going to battle through it in ugly ways. And I think that's true for the character of this book, and, you know, I'm not making a blanket statement about, do I think that this is difficult for everybody? No.
Well, think of the books that sort of were breakthrough books. City of Night was a book about prostitution. Mm-hmm. Paul Bowles, whatever the sexuality of a story, the mood was one of violence, agitation, and rape.
Yeah, yeah.
Of being unsettled.
Yeah.
And I think Truman Capote has, in the very early stories, sort of demonic children. also in Other Voices, Other Rooms, that there's a kind of seduction going on that is akin to the seduction of literature. It's like saying there is a secret place, uh-huh, and you can only find it by exploring books, uh-huh, and exploring your own hidden places.
Yeah.
So literature and the forbidden, uh-huh, become linked to one another. When I say dark, I'm not saying bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm saying unknown.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm right there with you. I think that it's always necessary to discover why, what's been forbidden and why, you know, and whether or not it might just be the thing for you.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and I've been talking with Justin Torres, author, well, it's his first book, of We the Animals, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Thank you, Justin, for joining me.
Thank you. It was really lovely chatting with you.
Thank you. You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from We the Animals at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to recording engineer Paul Ruist at the Argo Studios in Manhattan. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
A bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. And we're just reading this. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
To tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.